Computer. Okay. So welcome to Zen Talk. I feel like it's been a long time, but it's only been a week and a half, 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
So we're here and we have some questions. So we'll jump into that in a second, but go ahead.
Before you get started, just some housekeeping.
I love housekeeping.
If you have questions, you could do one of a few things. You can literally just raise your hand so we see you. You can click on the raise hand button, which is in the upper right-hand corner of your thing, or you can...
The upper right-hand corner of your thing.
Yeah, right. Or you can just type in group chat saying, hey, I have a question, and you know, that's the deal. And one of the people said, well, I don't know if I could do it because my three-year-old, whatever. We want you, you know, don't worry if you're not disturbing us.
No.
If you have a kid around.
No.
Because we have this special mute button.
We can mute you.
So we... Wouldn't it be nice if we could mute our kids, like in real life?
No, because then we wouldn't hear them.
I would love muting them sometimes. I'm a muter. So anyways, and then Lauren just showed up, and now we're good to go.
Okay, so before we jump into questions, and we are doing a show all about this tomorrow, so I'm just going to like touch on this. But, you know, it looks like, except for Todd, there's all women on this call thus far.
Shocking.
And I wanted to say that this Me Too hashtag has been pretty great. And for those of you who don't know about Me Too, it's a hashtag that started yesterday or maybe 2 days ago. And I think that the person who's getting that is getting the credit for starting it is Alyssa Milano. Remember who's the boss?
And her name was Samantha.
Yes. And she's done so much since then, but I'm using that because of our, you know, generational awareness. And basically it's just a hashtag to say that, you know, if you've ever been sexually harassed or sexually assaulted, it's a hashtag to say Me Too. And the reason why it's powerful is if you were on Twitter, Facebook, or anything else, you can see how many women have experienced this. And this awareness is coming together and speaking up and saying, this is something that's been this is normal in my life, or it has been, or I've had an experience, brings awareness to something that maybe a lot of men didn't know. And there are some men who have been too. I get that. But this is when you look statistically, that there is more women who are affected by this. And a lot of times, especially in my line of work, I hear these stories from women all the time. I hear it from little girls. I hear it from eighth graders. I hear it from high schoolers and my college students all the time. And so I just wanted to say that sometimes these things are waves of hope, and sometimes you never know what's going to make the change.
What if they don't know what you're talking about right now?
But I just explained.
The hashtag is called...
I've said Me Too like three times.
Okay.
So. Yeah. I don't think you were listening to my beginning.
No, probably not.
Yeah. I explained what it was and that Alyssa Milano started it.
Right.
And that what it was for.
Okay.
So.
Got it.
So Todd, I was just going to give Todd credit for listening.
I'm a good listener.
To my Me Too stories. And now
I am Mr. Listener.
Yes. So, but he actually is. He asks me questions. And even when he doesn't ask me questions, I tell the stories.
I guess what I'm saying is about the reach. Like you've gotten inundated in social media of how big it's become in the last 12 hours.
Correct. I said that for the last 2 days it's been on Twitter and been on Facebook. And that it's been, and so if I didn't explain that well enough, that was, you know, what it was. So,
yes. So
anyway, I just wanted to say that my whole intention of bringing that up was you never know what's going to make a shift and bring something to the forefront. Like who could have guessed 2 weeks ago that this whole thing, this, you know, this article about Harvey Weinstein would open this floodgate of discussion about sexual harassment and sexual assault and people who enabled it and people who didn't talk about it. And I that's what, when we talk about on the show, like if people keep speaking up and talking and connecting and opening, you just never know what's going to make the change. And I don't know what this will lead to, but it's already.
Well, and we talked just about 20 minutes ago, and this is.
On the show, yeah.
No.
Oh.
In the kitchen.
Oh, in the kitchen. Yes.
Like, okay, so what do we do?
Right.
And what we do to any guys that I can somehow reach is we need to ask our wives. You tell me if I'm saying this right. Ask our wives if they've been affected by this sexist culture, sexual harassment, sexual discrimination, sexual assault. Because us guys, it's uncomfortable to think about our wives or our daughters in that situation. And we tend to kind of put our head in the sand And that doesn't help. So I think what you said is, if nothing else, like, what could the guys do today to help? And step one is to ask your wives if this has happened.
Yeah. Tell me your stories. And the thing is I've not done.
Because I've never asked you that.
Right. No. I have offered my stories up to you.
Yes.
So we've done shows about it where I've talked about, there were things you didn't know about how I get in the car and mm-hmm. look behind me to make sure there's nobody in the car, how I walk through a parking garage with my keys in my hand, how I, you know, from high school and from when I was in college, I would run home, how I had men on the bus, you know, flash me, how I had a next door neighbor who would flash me walking home. And I could go on. Those are the non-personal ones. But these are things that we've normalized. And when I tell them to Todd, and especially if he didn't know, or now that he, and this isn't the only reason, there's a lot of men who are taking a hit for saying, well, I have daughters, so now I'm worried about it. The hope is that you're just worried that other human beings are being affected. But to add on top of that, when you have daughters, it does impact you in a different way.
Well, and you said, like, you know, where do you even begin telling the story? And the other thing you said was, if, let's say, a husband asks a wife, and she's not in a position to even go there yet.
Right.
And how do you kind of, like, if a guy asks once, and she's like, well, I don't know, like, it's because you have to kind of, like, bring this stuff that you pushed down for the last 30 years of your life.
And stuff that's been normalized. Yeah. So you're like, was that harassment? And then when you start to think about it, you're like, wow, like, I do therapy with women all the time. You know, I do sessions with women and they'll talk about things that have happened and I'll say, oh, that was abuse. And they'll go, that was abuse? And I'm like, yes, that was abuse. And then they finally have a word to understand why they feel so invaluable and why they feel so small. And they're like, oh, now I understand. So again, we're talking about this on the show tomorrow. I didn't want to make this the whole Zen talk. I just wanted, since it's in the ethers right now, I wanted you guys to, if you haven't read about it yet, you know, go online and see all these hashtags
and listen to tomorrow's show.
And listen to tomorrow's show. So let's jump in with
question number one.
Okay. Well, should we go to them first or do you want to
do it? I'll do question one. Okay. And if somebody has a question, raise their hand. We'll go to you next or just put it in the chat thing. Question number one. My husband gave me some feedback yesterday that I found very interesting. He said he thinks I care too much about too many things and that it sometimes creates tension in our household. Now, on one hand, I think this is about him as a white man having the luxury of not having to think about as much as I do. However, I haven't been able to find a way to convey this message in a way that he can hear. Do you have any thoughts on how to deliver this message in an effective way? And lastly, I think this feedback speaks to the fact that it is challenging to balance deeply caring about important things in the world and enjoying life and living in a playful, lighthearted way. I would love to hear your thoughts. So if I can summarize those questions, her husband says that she cares too much about things and to lighten up. And she's also struggling with the balance between maybe there's a part of him that's right and let's just live in the moment and be happy while at the same time being able to talk about this important, heavy stuff. What do you think?
Well, I think the first thing that why this is tough, and this is kind of where, you know, coming from this as like a sensitive person myself, is what he's saying to her, even though this is not like his intention, but the way it's landing is, please be different than what you are, and please stop feeling things. Hi, sweetie. Please stop feeling the way you do, and please be more like me. That's really what that statement says. And while he has every right to say, wow, you really seem to worry about a lot of things, the way to express that, and again, he's not here, so, you know, I can't, but the way that would be nice if he was able to express that, in that it concerns me, or sometimes it feels like, you know, he can take ownership of it. It feels like that you're worried about a lot of things. So tell me about that. Tell me about your experience so I understand better. Seek first to understand, then to be understood. And that would be the best way for him to go in. Now, he's not on this call. She's asking the question, how do I approach him? And the answer is to say to him, when you say that to me, it sounds like you don't understand me. And what I want to do is help you understand the way I feel and why things concern me, rather than think that I need to change to make you happy. Mm-hmm. And that opens a discussion. coming back with like, I'm going to get him back with like the best line, and I'm going to like, you know, make him stop in his tracks, and I'm really going to freak him out. It's not going to do anything, because you're just going to be doing this, and he's going to be holding on to his point, and you're going to be holding on to your point. So any kind of conversation that you have about something so sensitive, you have to be going in and saying, let me explain who I am. You know, something that I used to say to you, and I don't know if you remember, but I would take ownership and say, I don't think I've done a very good job explaining who I am. And even though sometimes I act this way, really, I'm actually worried about this. Or sometimes things in the world do make me really anxious. And you telling me to not feel anxious doesn't decrease my anxiety. What decreases my anxiety is you understanding and allowing me to have the space to discuss it. That decreases my anxiety. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the way we talk to children. You know, if we talk to them in a hierarchical, I can't say that word, but
hierarchical
way, where we're looking down on them and saying, you need to change, you need to do this, you need to be better. They're not going to be like, okay, I'll change. All they're going to do is feel shamed. And it's the same way in a partnership. He has every right to say, it feels like you get overwhelmed by things all the time. And I want to understand that better. But if it's, you get overwhelmed, you need to change, that's just hitting a wall.
And in addition to all of that, and I don't know this woman and I don't know this guy, mm-hmm. but it is possible that maybe there needs, that a better balance does need to be struck.
Right.
In addition to it. Maybe she is taking things a little too, like, is there any truth, elements of truth to what he's saying? And there may not be,
but
you need to explore that, right?
Exactly. And that's exactly why I said he has every right to say,
right.
It feels like, because she may be overly, and when I say overly anxious, out of balance, anxious about things that don't necessitate anxiety. Like, you know, I have a friend that I'm thinking of who her house needs to be perfect all the time. And if a pillow's out of place, she gets angry and she's very focused on what other people think. That's a conversation where a partner can come in and say, you're really anxious about this, and I want to talk about this because it concerns me. And that her self-awareness needs to be, you know, she needs to kind of stimulate her own self-awareness. So,
plus, it's a tough question to answer because he said he thinks I care too much about too many things. I mean, it's so vague.
It's general.
It's hard for us to kind mm-hmm. of grab that. So,
but I think her question was, in the end, how do I bring this up? Because it feels to her as he has the luxury to not worry about things. And this often becomes the mom, dad, CEO of the house.
Mom carries it.
Because there's a lot of things that dads, and I'll speak generally, because there's moms who do this too. But there's a lot of times dads think that things just get magically done. And they don't realize
the fairy
that someone,
princess.
I always say the fairy, is that what I say? Not fairy princess.
Fairy godmother?
I say the... Yeah, what do I say? Just the fairy. Some kind of fairy takes care of this business and makes the doctor's appointments and buys the Christmas presents, and they just show up and they're like, isn't this great that it's here? And it's like, actually, my caring about that is what brought that into the room. You know what I mean? Or the fact that the house is clean and, you know, that the dishes are put away in the morning. I did that. Someone did that. And sometimes that's where the conversation is the reason I'm concerned about things is the amount of things that I take on. It's a good opportunity to like say, here's what I'm doing. And then he would probably have a list and say, here's all the things I'm doing you didn't know about.
Yeah.
You know, this is not a win. It's not like I'm going to go in and win.
The minute that you go into any discussion with your business partner, with your marital partner, with your kid, with the intent to win, you got issues. Yeah.
Hitting
a brick wall. So that's a whole nother discussion about how not to try to win, because
all right.
Our ego is kind of hardwired to do that. But anyways, here's the second question. Hold on. Megan says, I see a similar dynamic in my marriage. My husband and I have talked about this a lot. We've noticed that I'm more of a future thinker. He's in the moment.
Yes. Yes.
Where is Megan? I don't see her on here.
There she is.
Do you want to talk? Just give me a thumbs up or no.
No.
No, she doesn't want to talk. Okay.
Megan, I totally agree that sometimes and I'm going to say this as like, this is not about your husband specifically, but sometimes the excuse is, I'm living in the moment and you need to live in the moment like me. And even though that living in the moment is a great thing and presence is a great thing and being mindful is a great thing, if we're just in the moment all the time and we're not thinking, and I don't mean worrying, but we're not saying, okay, when is the doctor's appointment, or my daughter does have a band lesson tomorrow, then things don't get done. So there's a balance of both. And you, that's the thing that we bring. And it sounds like you have these conversations with your husband, but it's not about he does it right and you do it wrong, or he's laid back and you're highly anxious. It's both of them come together. And, you know, Todd, our big discussions before used to be, this is like way back in like year one of Zen parenting, if you want to bore yourself and go back that far.
Wait a second. It's not boring.
We used to talk about the fact that I was carried all the emotion in the family, and Todd got to walk through and go, what's wrong? Nothing's wrong. What's wrong? And it's because I was carrying all the emotion, and it allowed him to be like, oh, you're crazy.
Right.
I got to be the crazy one, and he got to be the rock solid grounded one. Mm-hmm. And that was out of balance.
Well, you used to think that I was your rock, when actually what I was numb.
Yes.
And that took a little bit of, and it's still something I'm working through, but you kind of like put me on some pedestal, like, oh, isn't he great? When in fact, I was just numbing out, which required you to carry emotion of some heavy situation that happened going to my mom's house.
I was
going to
say,
like
it was often about his family, and I would worry about it. He'd be like, it's fine, you're crazy. And so he got, you know, again, like Todd said, I would be like, oh, I wish I could just be as like present as Todd is. And that's not, he wasn't present. He was just making it unintentionally. He was not worrying about it because I worried about it. And what in a partnership, what we have to do is we have to both be willing to come to the table and carry some of the energy. And what does carry the energy mean? Talk about it. Say out loud what's really happening. That was really difficult with your mom today. And he's like, yeah, that's really difficult. And it disperses it rather than me being like concerned about it and him being like, you're too overreactive.
Yeah.
So these are, as all things we talk about, it's an ongoing conversation, and it's the bravery that it sounds like you have, Megan, to even bring it up, or the bravery that your husband has to bring it up. Like it's, you know, goes both sides. It's like, and it will, my favorite feedback I get about our show is when people write to us or they say, it makes me feel so much better that you guys tend to argue or get frustrated about the same things over and over and over again. Because a lot of people think once you have the discussion once, we've solved it. And if it comes up again, we've got problems. And it's like, no, it's an issue that needs consistent discussion. And it's not something that if you talk about it once, it goes away. It may, and that's great. It doesn't mean that it's weird if it goes away. It just means if it comes up again, it means it needs, you know, it's like I tell my daughter to put her shoes away once. Do you think she's putting them away?
We're still working on that.
They're not. You should see my door right now. There's 10 pairs of shoes. I have 3 children. I don't know whose shoes those are.
It's theirs. They have too many shoes.
I think they
do. Too many shoes for these spoiled kids. Okay, so before I get into the next question, one of the listeners, one of the Zen teammates, which I think this is a really good idea. So if you're listening, get to your computer as soon as you can, because I'm just going to have you say your name and where you're from.
Okay.
In an effort to kind of build a little bit of rapport and community and everything else.
Well, just so people know where everybody lives.
Right. And so if you can't, because there's some people that are just on the phone, so yeah. I can't see if they're ready or not, but I'm just going to go from the top left. And then work my way around this way, and like a snake, like this snake, all the way around like that. Are you with me?
I'm with you.
All right, so I'm going to unmute Jennifer in the upper left-hand corner. Jennifer, are you there?
Yes.
Where are you from, and who are you?
My name is Jennifer Rocco, and I am from Morristown, New Jersey.
That wasn't too hard, right? So I'm going to mute Jennifer, and now I'm going to go to Karen, who looks like she's in the kitchen.
She's busy.
Hold on, let's see. Here she comes.
Hi, Karen.
Hi, Karen. Oh, she's busy.
Hi guys.
Who are you? Where are you from?
I'm Karen, and I'm from Rhode Island.
Karen from Rhode Island. Thank you, Karen. We're going over to Jen Rogers. Jen, who are you? Where are you from?
Hi, I'm Jen. Jennifer Rogers. I'm from Cool, California.
I want to be from Cool, California. That's really awesome. All right, moving along. I'm going to go to Lindsay. Lindsay, who are you? Lindsay, are you there? I know you're looking at me. Can you hear me, Lindsay? I can't hear you. Test your mic and I'll get back to you.
Or just chat it to us.
Or you could chat it to us.
And then we'll say it.
Thank you. Oh, Lindsay's in a classroom with students. She can't talk out loud. Oh, goodness. Thank you. Liz, your turn.
Hi, I'm Liz and I'm from Massachusetts.
Awesome. Thank you, Liz. And now to Lauren.
It's Lauren. You know Lauren.
Hi.
Hi, Lauren.
Can you hear me okay? Hi, I'm Lauren, and I live in Hawthorne Woods, Illinois.
Awesome. Thank you, Lauren.
Thanks, Lauren.
Over to Megan. Your turn.
Hi, I'm Megan. I live in Jacksonville, Florida.
Ooh, nice. I love how we're getting all these states.
She's a gator, sweetie.
She is.
All right. Over to Millie. Hi, Millie.
Hi. I am from the town of San Carlos in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Are you a 49ers fan?
Oh, yeah. You should have heard my husband yesterday.
All right. I can't see Karen. I'm going to try anyways. Karen, are you there or no?
There she is. No, we already did Karen.
Oh, we did Karen. Oh, sorry. Okay. It's rotating on me. She was the one with the scissors.
I know. She had the knife. She sometimes on our screen, like people, because they come and go, yeah, it shifts. So that's okay. Around. That's a good start.
It's a good start. And hold on. What about Kathy, though?
That's me, dude.
Oh, that's you.
Oh, no, maybe it's not.
Kathy, are you there?
Yeah.
Where are you from? Yeah. Yeah. Where are you from?
Outside Denver, Colorado.
Awesome. Thank you, Kathy.
I was just there, Kathy. I love Denver.
And then last but not least, we have Allison. Hold on, Allison. Allison, are you there? Oh, from Allison.
Yes.
She's at work and she can't talk out loud either.
No problem.
No problem. So
she's from Montana, Missoula, Montana.
Ooh, and when I think of Montana, I think of A River Runs Through It. One of the best movies of all time, and JC thought it was boring. Oh, so she doesn't know what she's talking about.
Yes.
So, Jennifer, thank you for inviting us to do that. That's an exercise we should probably do every week, but we didn't, so thank you for reminding us. All right, next question. Oh, wait, Amanda says she can't talk either. She's at work. But she lives in Mount Kisco, New York.
Yeah. There was somebody on, so those of you who are here and then other people who will listen to this later, there was someone, I think it was Kelsey, on the Facebook page that is anyone else from New York. And I know that we have people from New York. I think we have like four or five. So if you're watching this and you're on the Facebook page, Kelsey is looking for other people in New York to talk with. And I don't, again, New York's a big state. I don't know if you're really close to each other, but just wanted to at least give a shout out for her.
All right. Next question. My question is about inappropriate lyrics to songs that my kids listen to. My son is 9. My daughter is 12. Concerned about lyrics such as, I'm in love with the shape of you.
I'm in love with the shape of you.
Who sings that?
Ed Sheeran.
I think it's Ed Sheeran, but go ahead. Put your hands on my body.
Well,
how does that go?
I think it's the same song.
But can you sing it?
No, I don't want to sing that
Put
part.
Put your hands on my body. Most songs I let them listen to, but the one that says I'm in love with the shape of you makes me cringe. I finally had to tell my daughter, you know, I'd really like to turn this song off because it insinuates that girls are just valuable for their body types and not their personality intellect. There is so much more to girls than their body shapes, and this song does not promote their well-being. She listens and says she's just listening to the music, but I can't help but think these lyrics, there's others too, I just can't think of them, that are so much more racy than what we listen to, don't have an effect on our kids. But this is coming from someone who grew up in Madonna era. Any thoughts?
Oh my gosh, it's so funny that she says growing up in the Madonna era, because for as much as I totally understand what she's saying, and I'll speak to that in a second. I grew up with pretty racy lyrics. I think that's kind of, it's the Alfie Cohn thing where we look at our kids and we think they are, you know, experiencing that kids today are experiencing so much worse than we did. And again, we can talk about technology and pornography. I mean, there's some discussion that we can have, but at the same time, I grew up with Madonna singing Like a Virgin and like totally gyrating all over the stage, and with Prince's, you know, Darling Nikki, and with Little Red Corvette. And, you know, I was singing those songs too. And the one thing I will say is that I think it's a good conversation point, meaning she has every right to bring it up and say, oh, that lyric is interesting. You know, there's nothing wrong with saying what she said. I think, though, it can be, once you get to the point where you say, we're not going to listen to this anymore, you can say, I don't really like this song, or this song doesn't speak to me. But as soon as something becomes hands-off or something we can't listen to anymore, it can become really exciting to listen to. And it can, you can kind of move the other way instead of keeping a conversation open about what they're saying in this song. Because I believe that her daughter or her son really are just listening to the music because they don't have an adult understanding of what "I'm in love with the shape of you" means. I sing lyrics now from the 80s where I'm laughing out loud at what I thought the lyrics were and then what they really are. You know, I was just kind of trying to sing and make them rhyme, and I was making up words. And I'm saying that just because, again, sometimes we put on our adult glasses. Ooh, that's my email. Sometimes we put on our adult glasses and we view everything our children are experiencing through this adult lens, and they have a childlike lens. It doesn't mean we can't bring up that the lyrics are racy, but I think 50% of the time they don't even know that. And so the concern about it is what I'm really speaking to, is we can bring it up. It's kind of like watching Friends on TV or watching any show these days. There's so much to discuss, and it brings about really great conversations. Pop culture allows us to discuss a lot of things that are in the world. And of course, that doesn't mean they can watch rated R movies too early, or I'm not saying that you don't monitor what they're watching. It's just, I think we should use it rather than fear it.
So my take is, first of all, I love this question. I'm glad that she asked it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, to Kathy's point, I think you need to at least think about whether or not you want to bring it up. And if it feels right to bring it up, then you should bring it up. But I also think that it is an opportunity to either connect with your daughter and son or disconnect from them. And to your point, if we demonize something, it makes it more exciting. It reminds
more appealing.
More appealing. Mm-hmm. So it makes me think of Shaw from Footloose.
Shaw didn't want them to dance.
No dancing.
No drinking.
Nothing. But Shaw was allowed to listen to orchestra music. Talk about it. Yeah.
Classical
music, whatever. Because Shaw. There's a part where, we've seen this movie 45 times, by the way.
Right.
There's a part where he is listening to music while he's writing his sermon for the next Sunday.
And she's like, you get to listen to music.
And he says that this music isn't confusing and it's not meant to confuse and all that other stuff. So my point in talking about Footloose is it's an awesome movie and that we should all go see it.
And we should all do the Kevin Bacon dance moves?
Yes.
Willard dance moves.
Willard learned how to dance. Not to bring too much light to it. I think it's an opportunity. Like, I remember we had John Duffy on the podcast.
And oh, yeah, this is
most
good.
Of his kids that he talks with listen to, like, Kanye and Eminem.
Chance, the rapper.
Chance. And he, like, totally digs. He connects with them based on that music. And, like, I remember saying to him on the podcast, I can't stand Kanye. He's like, Todd, the minute you tell any kid that they can't stand Kanye, you have disconnected from them. And you don't have to say you like it, but you say, help me understand why you like this mm-hmm. music. And John actually learns to love it. Like, I think Kanye is a really good musician. I don't like all the antics that he participates in outside of the music, which tells me I don't want to listen to his music. But instead of demonizing something, say, tell me why you like this. And let them tell you. Open up the conversation as opposed to shut it down.
And asking them the question, it may not – I'll give you an example, and then Jen has a question, or Jen has her hand raised, is that when I listen to a song, all I hear are the lyrics, okay? Like, when I hear a song, the reason I'm going to like a song is because of the lyrics. Todd, I will say, oh my gosh, did you just hear what they said? And Todd will say, I have no idea what you're talking about. I only hear the music. He doesn't hear the lyrics. And then when I sing the lyrics to him, or I'm like, hear this, he still is like, that's not what I'm listening for. The reason why that's important is because, to Todd's point about when we ask our kids, instead of assuming that they're picking up something negative from it, we ask the question, tell me why you like this song. Because, like, that Ed Sheeran song, have you ever heard the beginning of it? It's got the coolest, like, drum. Do you know the song? It's called Shape of You. So, and if you know anything about Ed Sheeran, he's actually an advocate for women. Now, we may say, oh my gosh, but then he shouldn't say that. And I can hear that. Like, I can agree with, maybe he shouldn't just be talking about being in love with a woman's body. Maybe he should be saying, I'm in love with your mind too. But have you ever heard his song, you know, Thinking Out Loud, and how wonderful, how beautifully he sings about this woman he's in love with and how he's in love with, you know, her inside. So that's a discussion. See, like, oh, in this song, he's talking about her body, but in the other song, he actually mentions how much he loves who she is as a person. So that's a conversation, and versus a, we're not going to listen to this anymore. And then, so now Jen.
All right. So I'm going to lower Jen's hand and I'm going to unmute her. Jen, what do you got?
Hi. I just wanted to say that I have issues with that song too. And my daughter's 10. And I briefly tried to explain why I didn't like it, to which, like, I don't care. I like this song. But in the car, there are certain songs that I don't like, so I just change it. Or if she doesn't like it, we just change it. So I know she's still going to hear it, but I don't personally want to hear it. So I just change it. I don't know. We tried to have a conversation, but like you're saying, she's 10. I don't think she quite gets it. And like you're saying about lyrics from our generation, I think of Winger's song, She's Only 17, and how wrong that song is.
Totally.
Now. So now I just, you know, certain songs are just annoying or I don't care for, and I let her change it too. So it's just like, man, we're just going to change this one. So that's how I deal with it.
Thank you, Jen. I'm going to mute you and kind of expound upon what you're saying.
Yes.
Somehow we managed to get married, have healthy relationships, even though we listened to Winger.
Yeah. And we just listened to Winger the other day. Remember when that song came out?
I will never put on record that I ever listened to Winger.
Hairband 39 on Sirius Radio. I was a big hairband person, so but to Jen's point, She's Only 17 is gross. And there's another song that where this guy sings, she's just 16 years old. Like, there's a lot of 16-year-old songs too. And so, and I love what Jen said, because instead of making an issue like, you can't listen to this or this is a problem, she's just like, this song isn't for me. And we do that all the time in the car. What we do in the car when the five of us are traveling is everybody gets to choose a song. And so I go, then Todd goes, and then, you know, and so that is how we kind of demonstrate what kind of music inspires us or what we like.
I'm going to go to Jennifer. Jennifer, do you want to say what you wrote?
I can summarize it. So the songs that my son listens to now, it's funny because they'll play the same songs at the high school during like football practice, but because there's so many explicit lyrics, like, you hear less words and more either, you know, nothing or beeps.
Yeah.
So I've talked to him about it. I've said, like, listen, like, really? I mean, this song has so many swear words in it. Like, I feel like it's all very negative. So I even try to listen to the lyrics and say to him, like, well, what are they trying to say? Or what's the meaning of this? And he does, it's funny, kind of like what Todd says, he'll say, Mom, I just like the beats. Mm-hmm. Like, he feels those beats can relax him or whatever. But then I guess my irrational fear is I feel like he's internalizing some of this stuff, because there is a lot of swear words, the N-word, bitches, whores, suck my this and that. Like, there's stuff that I'm like, holy crap, I am not really comfortable with this. So we do have a conversation about it, but I don't feel like he's at the age, my little guys who are 10, I have 10-year-old twins, like them, I can control really, you know, what we're listening to and what we're listening to as family. But with my son, you know, he's not with me most of the time. He's away from me more than he's with me. So I'm trying to get to that point in my life where I just say, I know he's a good, decent boy, and I have to trust that just because he's listening to these songs with crazy lyrics, he's not going to be a horrible person. So I'm trying to trust that, but it is hard because I find much of the music very distasteful. And some of it's really good. Like, some of the stuff he does listen to, I like, there is a depth to it and I like it, but a lot of it I can't hear past all those swear words. Mm-hmm. Awesome. So it's hard.
So I'm going to mute you just so we can hear each other. I completely honor what you're saying, Jennifer. And if it goes against your essence, your being, to be a participant of listening to certain lyrics, you can say, listen, I can't tell you what to listen to or what not to listen to. And actually, you can try to prohibit it if it's like blatantly violent, then you can maybe set up some boundaries. But if it's in that gray area, say, I can't tell you what to listen to, but I don't want to be listening to this. So can you please do me this one favor and listen to this music somewhere else? Mm-hmm. What do you think of that?
Of course. I mean, and that's kind of what we, you know, mean by a discussion, is that we can share our perspective And when they're little, we have more kind of, you know, it's easier to turn off a song, decide what we're going to buy, decide what they're going to hear because they don't have devices yet. But as they get older, our goal is intrinsic motivation rather than extrinsic. And instead of trying to create this like wall around what they can listen to and not, you continue the discussion of like what, you know, Jennifer just said about, when I hear this, I can't get past all the swear words. It like hurts my body. I say that all the time about TV shows and maybe some songs too, where I'm like, girls, I can't hear this because it hurts my body. Mm-hmm. So I understand you like the beat or whatever, but it's like, it's hurting me. And I make it more of a joke rather than a shame. You know, like I'm so ashamed that you would listen to this. No, that's extrinsic. That's like, I'm disappointed in you for hearing this. And then the kid's like, oh God, you know, I can't. Then it all sudden becomes taboo. And we know when things become taboo, it goes the wrong way. So instead it's, this is not my favorite kind of music. And those have been interesting discussions with my 14-year-old. I have found that's been very connecting. And it doesn't mean she doesn't listen to certain songs because they're just out there in the ethers. Like you said, they're at football games. They're on the, you know, NFL. They are played, you know, they are the songs that are played over a movie clip. Like it's just there. So let's talk about what it is rather than pretend it's not there.
Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you.
We grew up with that.
And let's talk about all the good things and the bad. Sorry.
That's okay. I was thinking about like the other day I was listening to the 90s station and I like Big Butts came on. I was thinking about how I know every word to that song and what that's all about. Like that we were all singing that and it was like, okay. And now it's so to me, not socially appropriate, yet it's still out there and I used to sing it. And then also, do you guys remember Two Live Crew? I had a Two
More
Live
like
Crew
two
album.
Lewd crew, sweetie.
Oh my God. And you know, I actually did a report on why censorship was horrible and I like was throwing Tipper Gore under the bus. We become different people. We have to go through these like, do you remember when Tipper Gore was?
No, I don't, but I think it's hilarious.
Well, Tipper Gore wanted to put things on albums that gave them a rating. Mm-hmm. And that was before, we're used to this now, but there was a time when this was being discussed, like we're going to put ratings on albums because Two Live Crew was over the top. And I did a speech on why that's censorship, which makes me laugh as a 46-year-old woman now. Like I was like, no, freedom of speech, which I still believe in, but I have a more well understood, rounded version of what that means. And at the time I was a late teen or early 20s. And I was just like, let me listen to my dirty music, you know? And we danced to it. It wasn't like I was singing it and hoping that boys thought about me this way. We danced to it. And these are the things we have to remember as parents, not then to be permissive, but then to get in our kids' heads and understand them. The more amnesia we have about our childhood, the worse off we'll do because we have to remember where we were. And then we can even share those stories. But I'm not going to share Two Live Crew. I'm not bringing that back.
Yeah, no. And I'm not close to a perfect man, but the going joke is my parents were the parents that would let me watch Animal House when it came out when I was 7 years old.
Saturday Night Fever.
Just a lot of bad messages in some of these movies. And somehow I managed to be okay. So,
well, you didn't even know what you were looking at.
Well, I knew I was looking at naked chicks.
Yeah.
That was pretty awesome. I mean, it was. I'd be lying if I didn't say it wasn't. But did I say naked chicks?
You did. Ooh. Yeah, see?
Naked ladies.
We just talked about this on the show, about how sometimes with our language, like if he was talking to a bunch of men, they'd be like, yeah, naked chicks. But it's like I was watching, and again, it gets to like I was watching nudity as a child. And,
Well, I'm trying to deprogram my.
It's hard.
But somehow I managed to turn out okay. Mm-hmm. So the reason I say that story is because we love our kids so much, we want to guide them. And sometimes we guide them at the expense of connecting with them. Mm-hmm. And if your kid listens to Two Live Crew or Eminem or whatever, and it does not mean, it's kind of like playing, you know, this is
video
a
kid. Games. Yeah.
Because do I like violent video games? No, I don't. But it doesn't necessarily mean that your kid's going to turn into a violent person. So you got to have like a perspective shift too. It's a messy, icky, gray thing that we have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
This parenting thing's hard.
I know. And there is the, you know, continuum, you know, there's the, where things get too far, you know, and there's, but there's this whole gray thing. There's, I'm not going to let my kid do anything ever. And then there's, I'm going to let my kid do whatever they want. And then there's all this in between. And that's where presence comes into play, rather than making a declaration like this is never going to happen, or I would never do this, or, you know, there's this space of presence. And so Jen has something she wanted to say.
Actually, I'm going to go to Jennifer real quick.
Yeah, that's real,
okay. Jennifer, what's your policy on games?
So I feel like the violent video games, I guess with music, I feel like there's still something that's kind of left to the imagination, like something that you process in your own mind. Whereas the violent video games, especially nowadays, are so vivid and so realistic. And I feel that the idea of hurting people through, you know, guns or like the Grand Theft Auto ones. I mean, there's 8-year-olds in my town who are playing that game. I mean, you get points in some of those games for raping women, for burning their bodies, for like things that are so out of line with our value system as a family. Like, I really don't ban anything, but that I do. I don't purchase them. They're not allowed to have them in the house. If they go somewhere else and play them, we talk about them and we talk about the problems with them, but I obviously can't keep them from doing other people's houses. But I feel like in our house, that is not the kind of thing I want my kids exposed to. I want things that lift us up and fill us up and show kindness and caring and compassion. Not those, like those, they make me want to like be sick. Like they not just hurt my body, but make me really like, oh my gosh, I can't even believe these things exist and that they're being marketed to children. So I don't know. Maybe that's bad to ban them, but I'm really uncomfortable with them.
I just muted you. I think there's a red line.
Me too.
I think you draw a line in the sand saying, and then that's the other thing. You have to pick your battles. Like if you say no to everything, forget it. But maybe you say no to violent video games, but you're a little bit more lax on music or whatever. Because I completely agree with Jennifer. It's like those video games would never come close to, even if we had 3 boys, which we don't, they would not enter this house. Or if they did, there would be some discussion.
Yeah, and my nephew played some of those games, and there was sometimes for the holidays he would want those video games. And I knew I couldn't keep them from playing them, but my money wouldn't be spent on them. That's kind of, to your point, Jen, like, I'm not, you know, I'm not saying you will never look at this. And if you ever do, you're grounded for life. But what I'm saying is I will not invest in those. This is not the area. This used to be a really big hot topic for Todd and I about 5 years ago was violent video games, because to Jennifer's point, you know, the raping and the murdering. And then you, after you're done with that, you urinate on them. So that's really lovely. And you get a lot of points, and then you kill police officers, and it's really horrible. And then they also sold them at Toys R Us. Mm-hmm. Real good. So we were big advocates for, let's bring some awareness to what's in these video games. Play, if you have it, play it with your child and see what's happening. Mm-hmm. You know, if you want to not be like, oh, I just heard they're bad, actually play the game, because that's what I was able to do. And I was like, holy moly. So I could speak to my girls with some, rather than some like looking down on them. I was like, I've played it. And this is what you're, this is, you know, and this is like, so, like you said, against what is the norm of our home and our society. So again, that is the key to what you said is I know he may go somewhere else and play them, and he might, he probably will, but in his home, his moral standard in his home, or what's being demonstrated for him or role modeled, is this is not what we do. But kids do try things. They experience things, especially if it's, but it doesn't mean they will become it. Oftentimes that tells them what they don't want to be. You know, our kids have to have those experiences to sometimes, they have to push against a wall to say, that's not what I want to be. Mm-hmm. But they have to experience it first. And that's the hard part.
Right. So I just asked if anybody else had other question. I do have a can of worms question, which I think is going to be hard for us to answer, but we're going to try.
Yes, go ahead. I answered this online, but I'll do it.
Oh, you did?
The one about the boys?
This one.
Yeah, but go ahead, just in case someone
is it normal for my 12-year-old to always be talking about different boys she likes? She has new boyfriends often. She was asking me today why she can't go out on a date. She seems young for all this. Not really sure the right thing to say to her about it all. 12 years old, so 6th grade?
Mm-hmm. 6th or 7th.
Okay, what did you tell her?
What I told her was, it's very similar to the music. I said, sometimes when kids say they want a boyfriend or they have a boyfriend or a girlfriend, it's not always girls because boys say it too. We have to ask them, what do you mean by boyfriend? What does that mean? Because when I was in seventh grade, I had a boyfriend, and what it meant is when we walked down the hall, we waved to each other. And then I'd be like, you know, I saw him in the hallway, and I would tell people he was my boyfriend. And that went on for a good 6 months. And that was about the extent of that relationship. And why that's important is sometimes the words, it's the adult goggles, the words they're using scare us. Like, what does this mean? Does this mean that they're kissing or that they're sexually active in some way? And sometimes it's really innocent. And it just means she told him that I liked him. Then he told her that he liked me, and now he's my boyfriend. It's very, it opens that conversation up where, again, you're communicating with your child about what they're feeling. Because at 12 years old, things are happening in their mind and their body. And you can say, well, you shouldn't be feeling this way, but they are, because that's when girls are getting their periods now anywhere between 9 years old and, 16. So I've worked with, fourth graders and fifth graders who have their periods. So when that happens, everything starts to change as far as hormones and what's happening in their mind. And so to tell them they shouldn't be interested in that feeling of what it feels like to see a boy you like, it doesn't help, because they are. But it's often 89% of the time very innocent. And so it's like, what does that mean? And what I told her is, it's actually pretty great that she's talking to you about it. It's actually pretty great that she's saying, Mom, I like this boy or whatever, because it gives that opportunity to talk about what it means to be with someone who makes you laugh, or someone who is your good friend, or someone who respects you. It opens the door to talk about what kind of partnership they could look for. And it doesn't mean that they should be looking for a partner at 12. Please don't get me wrong. What I'm saying is that as long as she's saying, I like boys, it's like, what kind of boys do you like? What do you like about boys? What does he say that makes you think you like him? And then that creates a conversation about what kind of, you can impart some wisdom in that conversation. If you're like, oh, my daughter never talks about boys, and I'm sure she's just not interested. I hear so many people say, my son or daughter, they're just not interested yet. And I'm like, they are. They're just not telling you. And that's okay too. I'm not saying they have to share everything, but I work with fifth graders and we talk about it all the time. It's in the ethers. It's in, even if they're not super interested, a lot of their peers are. So it's out there. And so I guess my answer to this is, you don't have to be afraid. You don't have to be like, oh no, I need to stop this, or she's going to be boy crazy. Open it up and ask some questions, and then allow that, share your wisdom about what you know about partnership, because we say to our daughter all the time, who has, had a boyfriend or has had boys that she's liked, and she's 14, we talk about respect, and we talk about, do you speak up? And we talk about having someone who makes you laugh and being with people, if it be girlfriends or boyfriends, meaning friendships or relationships that are more partner filled. That's that. What do you think about that?
I think that you're right. I wasn't paying attention.
I didn't think so.
I was having a chat with somebody else who's going to ask a question.
Okay.
So, sorry.
Sweetie. No, it's all right.
Megan, you have a question or you have some thoughts. What do you got?
Yes, I do. My husband and I are both major perfectionists, and we really try hard not to expect perfection of our kids. We definitely don't expect them to be the best, the fastest, the brightest, the most anything. What we really want for them is a balanced, kind life. That's really what's most important to us. However, we're probably not modeling that in the best way. They don't see me being kind to myself necessarily, cutting myself a break, admitting when I make mistakes. They see me, kind of putting my head down and ignoring it and moving on to the next thing. So I want to be the model of someone who's less perfectionist oriented, and I want to help my husband in the same way. Because I don't want my kids watching us not making mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It's great. I love it.
That's a great question. And we might come back to you, but I'm going to mute you here. So first thing is, good for you. She at least has an awareness that she has this issue. Most perfectionists don't even know that they're supposed to be anything other than perfect.
Do any of you also struggle with this sometimes?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I got some hands raised. So bless you for having that awareness. So what you're having a hard time is going from thoughts to action.
Yeah.
How do we help her?
Well, and it's actually great, Megan, because the nice thing is this is just you. You know, a lot of times the questions we get are what people are worried about. They're like, how do I change my child? Or how do I let my child know this or that? And you already have the information to know that the way you're going to teach them is just through your own example. So you've already got a really huge piece, of the
puzzle.
Yeah, I guess so. Puzzle, pie, whatever. I'm always looking for the best way to describe it. But what I would say to you is, instead of thinking that this needs to be you all the time, meaning that every time, you know, I wish I did everything different, or I wish I could show them this, you know, person who is balanced and understands her flaws, all you have to do is in moments practice it. And you may only show it once every 3 days. And what does that mean? Show it. It means that when you do make a mistake, which you do, because we all do, you say, oh, you know what? I did that wrong. Or when they say, Mom, you already asked me this morning, you say, you know what? I did. Sorry about that. And you just practice it in little moments, because what you will find, and you already know this, is then they start mimicking that back to you. I can't tell you how often I hear my words coming out of my children's mouths now. Like, I heard JC and Cameron on the stairs yesterday. She was like, you know, you said I could borrow this. And she's like, no, I didn't. She said, you said, I was in the hallway and you said it. And she goes, oh yeah, I did say that. Sorry about that. Now, that doesn't always happen. But my point is the reason that there is space to say, I did that wrong, I'm sorry about that, is because they're hearing it in the house. And are they hearing it all the time? No, there are times when Todd and I dig in and, you know, maybe we don't want to say sorry about that. But it's practiced enough. And so you are going to get 5 chances today, Megan, to do that. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm making that number up. But we have chances all the time to be like driving in the car and we're getting annoyed at someone and we'll say something like, oh my gosh, would they just get over? And then you get alongside them and you see that they're older or that they are lost. And you go, oh my gosh, I was just so mean to that person. It looks like they're lost. I didn't realize that. It can be in the everyday situations where we start to be not so... we recognize our criticism of ourselves or other people, and then we pull it back with compassion.
Two things, and then and Jennifer wants to add something, which is awesome. The first thing is, this challenge is too big for you to think about. For me, too big to think about you and your husband.
Yeah, just
forget about your husband. Mm-hmm. Just do you. And maybe your husband will jump on board.
He'll watch you. He'll see it.
And it'll start to seep in. And it might take 5 years, or he might jump in, like, recognize it right away. So, but forget about him, because you don't have control over him anymore.
Not like forget about him.
She knows what I mean. The other thing is, in the movie Parenthood, Rick Moranis had a little girl that he was trying to raise to be the next perfect child.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the movie, he comes around and starts being silly and crazy. Have you ever seen the movie Parenthood, Megan? Okay, well, homework. Watch Parenthood sometime between now and the next 2 years, mm-hmm. and you'll love it. But Rick Moranis makes me think of, and by the way, we all have exactly what you're talking about in different degrees, right?
Of course.
All right, so.
I mean, we all, you know, we all have times, because we're human beings, I don't care how old we are, that we don't want to be wrong, that we want to just, like you said, mull ahead and pretend something didn't happen, or when we get embarrassed, we become angry instead, and we all have these defense mechanisms. They're very natural. They're very normal. Self-awareness is about recognizing them and making a different choice in that moment than we would have yesterday, to actually say, you know, that was embarrassing, or to laugh at yourself, or and then demonstrate to your children that when they make a mistake, you can kind of make light of it or speak up about it. You know, we're speaking so generally, it's hard to like give an exact example, but just to finish, and then we're going to go to Jen. Megan, it's what's nice about it is you don't have to take it all on at once. Just do one different thing today, and that's it. Or tomorrow, if you're like, I don't want to do it today. Do it tomorrow.
Yeah, sleep on it.
Sleep on it. Yeah. And then when something happens where someone is critical or they said you didn't do this and you said you were going to do this, instead of explaining and defending your position, say, you know what? You're right. I didn't do it. And owning it, it's so great when I did something wrong. And instead of trying to defend my position, I own it and apologize. You know what happens to it? Poof, it goes away. If I defend it, it stays in the air, and then no one won, and it becomes this conflict, and a lot of that's based on when we weren't heard in the past and how we're trying to, like, resolve some of that now. But anyway, I just wanted to say that it's a work in progress. It's a practice. Okay, Jen.
Hold on. Jennifer, you there?
Yeah. So I want to say to Megan that I have been practicing this a lot, and when you do practice it, it does get a lot easier. And to Kathy's point, it becomes very liberating because then you're not trying to hold up a standard to your children that you really can't hold up. And they see you more as a real person who they can relate to because they know they're going through all these challenges and all these struggles, and they know they're making mistakes every day. So if they look at us like we're not making mistakes, it's almost as if they think that that's the ideal they have to live up to, instead of, listen, we all make mistakes and life is hard, but we can do hard things. We can get through this together. My one son is taking trumpet right now and he's having a really hard time and he feels like he's a failure. So I used examples of like the mistakes in my current day that I'm like the mistakes I'm making or the struggles I'm having. And that really has connected us a lot because he realizes that being a grown-up doesn't mean doing everything really well or not making mistakes or making far fewer mistakes. So that's been really helpful. So I think that the more you do it, the easier it'll get. And it definitely has for me. I might be like talking too much about my mistakes now, but it's very liberating and it really is a source of connection with my kids.
Yes.
And to that point, one of the sources of meditation that I don't meditate a lot, but I want to meditate more, but I feel guilty when I'm taking time away from my kids. So I've tried to start a practice with them. And this was a separate issue, but one of the things that relates, we've started doing a loving kindness meditation. And I think it's Sharon Salzberg who does that, right? So, and she has a ton of like resources for kids, but the idea of picking certain things to say, like you say at the end, you know, may I be filled with loving kindness. But for my kids and I, we pick words that resonate with them. Like my one son is prone to anxiety. So he says like, may I be calm. My other son is prone to anger. So he says like, may I be patient. But the idea of the loving kindness meditation is you say it to yourself and then you extend it out to other people. And it really has helped me be kinder to myself because I am really hard on myself and very critical. And it's kind of been like a little magical thing that it really helps when you do this meditation. It can take like 2 seconds every day. You don't even have to do it with your kids, but I want to share this resource because we've been using this. I know you guys know Thich Nhat Hanh, but it's called A Handful of Quiet. And with my kids, we each get 4 stones. And we go around and we hold the stones and we do this little meditation that they have in the book. And it takes like 1 minute, but it's been really, really helpful. So if anybody's interested in doing it with their kids, I highly recommend this book because it makes it really accessible to kids. And it's easy for me too, because I'm not like a natural meditator. And then we tack on the loving kindness meditation at the end. And I think Kathy and Todd talk about this all the time, the idea of self-compassion. Until we can be kinder to ourselves, we really can't teach our kids to do the same, because if I'm beating up myself all the time and they see me doing that, that teaches them a really big lesson about not being kind to yourself. So I'm still working on it. I'm not super good at it, but I'm realizing that I want to be a powerful example for my kids. So I'm trying. So anyway, I thought that might help.
What's the name of that book, Jennifer?
It's called A Handful of Quiet.
And the reason I love Thich Nhat, I'm going to mute you. The reason I love Thich Nhat is because the dude's Vietnamese, which means he doesn't have good command on the English language, which means it's simple to understand. Like he he talks in like 6-word sentences and it's all like 2 syllables per word. I love it because I don't read that much and it's a pain to read like dense books. I've done it, but
yeah, he's so beautiful.
Laborious.
He's beautiful. And that's beautiful, Jennifer, like everything you said, I love. And that's what's fun, Megan, is that there's so many ways and there's so many ways to practice that it's not something that'll magically happen. And it's not something that we need to make other people do. We get to like find ways, and you may find one way and it works for a while and then it goes away. And then you find something else. And then that's the fun, is instead of getting rigid, like I'm going to do this every day and I've got to say this every day, or it's got to look like this. Just be present with the fact that you want to be more self-compassionate, more vulnerable, and more real. And if that's your goal, you're going to just naturally do that in more interactions and use humor. Yes. I laugh at myself so often, and Todd just totally busted me like singing in the car by myself, and videotaped me.
I did.
Don't share that.
Well, unfortunately, I was through a window and a screen, so the lens of the camera on my phone focused on the screen, so it wasn't as good as I was hoping. But yeah, she was kind of going nuts with the song. What song was it?
Scars to Your Beautiful by Alicia Cara.
And she didn't know I was videotaping her, and she was singing loud.
I love the words to that song. Talk about lyrics. I was like, I pulled up and I was just at the best part and I just had to like sing it really loud. And I walked in, he's like, you like that song, huh? And I was like, are you totally bust me like jamming out? And that's humor. Like we could, you know, you couldn't, and again, I wasn't offended at all, but say we were like, you know, offended or embarrassed, then we'd be like, what are you doing? And you know, we get all mad instead of just laugh. Like it's okay. And it's okay to like look stupid sometimes. I don't like looking stupid. I'm very like, especially when I'm, you know, speaking or something, I want to be so knowledgeable. But that, you know, to our point, there's too much pressure on that. I'm just not, yeah, look at this guy. Look at that.
Looks good, right?
That's all we got to say.
This is when I was a little kid and I used to like not shower. I mean, I still don't shower that much, but I used to like shower once a week or once every 5 days. And the way I would get ready for school, this is how I would do my hair. I would no comb, nothing. And then I'd be ready.
That's kind of gross.
Yeah, it worked. The girls loved me.
No, they didn't.
Ladies, LLCT. Ladies love cool Todd.
Todd had braces until he was a sophomore in college.
No, I was a freshman in college, sweetie. I got him off Christmas break freshman year. But that first year of college, ooh, ladies, look out. 4-year university with the braces. It was awesome.
Oh, it's funny. I didn't know you then.
No, you didn't. Thank goodness. Otherwise, you'd be like, who's this tool?
Yeah. You got hair on your chest when we were dating.
I know.
It took a long time for Todd to go through puberty.
I was a late sprouter. I'm looking forward to puberty.
Are you?
Yes.
Good. Me too.
It's going to be fun.
Me too.
All
right. I think it's been like an hour or so.
It's been an hour and 3 minutes.
Yeah, we should go.
Yeah, we should let you guys go back to work.
So these questions are great. If you, again, I'll send you the next Zen Talk. It's in a week and a half or 2 weeks. A week and a half. I don't remember.
It's
every 2 weeks. So you can write questions on the page. For those of you who are listening to this who are not on the Facebook page, I know you may not like social networking and you don't have to be on any other page, but the Facebook page is really helpful, meaning that a lot of people ask questions and people are reaching out to people, and you don't have to do it, but I do highly recommend it. And so you can always write a question there so you don't have to wait for a Zen Talk, even though I know this is more.
And I want to extend gratitude to everybody who joins these talks live. And I want to send equal gratitude for those who
listen to
later. You know, it's just, well, thanks to both sets of people.
Whatever works for you, we're happy with.
That's
so
right.
No pressure. And we'll, you know, just let us know how we can help you. And we love you and
keep trucking.
Yeah.
Adios.
Bye everybody. Have a good day.